This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
What's up, everybody? This is Carrick with ACG, and welcome to another Blathercast/Aimless podcast, where we're going to talk about everything under the sun. We're going to talk about real life. We're going to talk about games. Just hit and record and going with it. Never know where this podcast is going to go. I did ask for subjects, topics, questions, whatever you may have about real life, about hobbies, about games, what have you. That's what we're going to do. Sit down, grab yourself a Java. Hope you're driving around, maybe enjoying yourself on your commute, and you can cop a listen. Let's begin. First, I want to say thanks to everybody who ended up getting shirts. We're Teespring at ACG or ACG at Teespring. You can look it up in Google. Got some cool shirt designs there. Sold a bunch of shirts. A lot of people really happy with this design. I think it's great. I think it's one of those things that I've been wanting to do with the channel for a while, which is sort of separate myself from the channel a little bit when it comes to all of the art, because I see it a lot of times where people are like the art on the channel, the way their channel goes, everything is sort of about them. And I think that that's great if you're a diehard fan, but sometimes you just want some cool designs that are sort of tangentially connected. And that's what I did with this new art. So again, that's on Teespring, ACG. I'm really happy with it. And just want to say thanks to everybody. Been getting a ton of pictures. You can check out Twitter at Jeremy Penner. You can check out there where I've got a bunch of people posting pictures. Very cool stuff. Moving on from there, let's talk about a bunch of stuff. So this week has been sort of a downer, I think, for everybody. There's been all kinds of real life stuff. There's been game stuff. It's just been all over the place. It's difficult to really sort of get an identification on exactly how you would classify this week. But I think even starting out, it's been pretty rough. So what I did was I asked Patreon, Twitter, and of course, everybody in Discord to give me some ideas of what to talk about. And I figured let's just jump in here and talk about life, talk about topics, talk about just shit we've been doing. If you ever have topics for this podcast, always feel free to contact me on the Discord if you're there, or Patreon if you're there, or of course, Twitch. Usually it's best to contact me about Monday or Tuesday. One of the things that popped up was a person, Knight Commander David, on Twitter said, any book recommendations? My preferred genres are fantasy and cosmic horror, but any recommendation is welcome. That's actually... you know, that's something I definitely want to talk about. I've been doing a lot more reading, a lot more role-playing, a lot more D&D, just jumping into that. You can watch or listen, actually, to Sonicron and myself nerd the fuck out when it comes to, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. I think that was two podcasts ago during the week. But I've been doing a lot of reading. I'm a big fan of David Gamel. He's sadly passed away in the last 5 years. He was one of the more fantastic writers when it came to fantasy, because he actually had a fairly rough life and he took a lot of the truisms that he got from real life and moved them into his fantasy. And he started writing at a much later age, or at least started becoming popular. He did the Waylander series, Druss the Axe, a bunch of different series. And his stories are fantasy low, you know, low magic, I would say. They're more like the original Warhammer role-playing games, at least at the starting, where it's more like hedge wizards kind of thing. It's, you know, there's not, and maybe you're wise man or wise woman in a group or something like that. And it sort of starts out there. There's his definition of magic in that game is pretty much the source is what it's called. And that can be sort of anything. Very good books though. And a lot of truisms, and probably the best overall people and characters realistic to what I've experienced in life that I've ever read in a book. I think writing a character in a book can be eloquent and can be, at the same time, I think overly verbose, especially when they talk. And I have no real issue with that. I like poetic verse when it comes to my stories. I have no issue with that. But sometimes I like the more stark contrast as well, the way people would really talk. And that definitely happens in Gamel's stories. There isn't necessarily good guys, bad guys. There's more shades of gray. But additionally, when it comes to the way characters are, there's usually one or two characters with a fairly solid moral compass, but that moral compass is sort of, it's directed within their own worldview. Everybody may share the world in these games, but everybody's true north points just slightly different than anybody else's, if you get my drift. So They can all sort of identify what's good or bad, but how they get there or what they do, and exactly, more importantly, the actions that they take, of course, can be, I guess, sort of shaded by those thought processes. And when it comes to characters, Waylander, probably one of the most realistic, hard-assed characters I've ever read in a book. He's not necessarily always realistic. It's just some of the things he says and the way he reacts is a little bit more realistic than I think we see a lot of times. And, you know, I think that's why Game of Thrones is difficult for me to enjoy, because I came off of Druss the Axe and Waylander and Skilgannon and these characters that were in these books that were more realistic. And when I went to Game of Thrones, I think a lot of people like that darker, slightly more realistic, grittier fiction. But for me, it was actually a step down, if that explains it. And it was harder for me to get into because these other characters were they were just so much more realistic. They spoke to me at a certain degree. Now, what's weird is that's my number one when it comes to fantasy. However, I'm also a huge romantic / D&D high fantasy kind of lover as well. Dragonlance is my favorite series of all time. I mean, that series has to have like 200 books at some point. It's just crazy. It was originally TSR, the Wizards of the Coast, Margaret Weis and Tracy Hickman wrote them. Pretty high fantasy based on second edition and moving on from there when it comes to their world of Dragonlance. This was back in the day of, you know, your Dark Suns and your Kara Tor. Actually, it was post-Kara Tor, I guess, but it was Dark Suns, it was Spelljammer, it was Forgotten Realms, and it was Dragonlance. And Forgotten Realms was just too fantastic for me. I never really enjoyed it, and it seemed a little too spread out. Everybody was a power bard when it comes to characters in that game or in that world, but Dragonlance wasn't. It's still high fantasy. It's still romantic tropes. Romantic not meaning in the sense of lovers, though that does occur, but romantic in the sense of the higher fantasy and just the way those characters are presented. Very cool. And I dig them. And then when it comes to sci-fi, you know, I read pretty much everything. I'm not a huge fan of The Expanse, which I know a lot of people are. I do definitely like Warhammer 40,000. I've read The Expanse books. I thought they were pretty okay. I wasn't in love with them. I do like a lot of higher fantasy when it comes to my sci-fi as well, or more cosmic sci-fi, more really high futuristic, and romantic sci-fi, again, the same way, romanticism being a little bit more based on the heroes, bigger, larger than life heroes. I do actually like that in some futuristic books because it feels like everything's gritty. We know that. We live in that world. So when I see a future where they're like, it's grittier, I'm just like, all right, that's great and everything, but it doesn't always catch me. But when I get a game world or a novel's worlds and fantasies, and they feel like there's a slight way in which humanity is adjusted, I actually dig that. And I've really liked a lot of different books. I don't really have any sci-fi ones that I would say I'm big into. Back into the slightly grittier cyberpunkish, of course, Altered Carbon. I read those when I was younger, and is now a series on Netflix. But I think the Takashi Kovacs series are some of the best written books I've ever read. There's a very thick, dense prose to them. I wasn't as big of a fan of, like, let's say Snow Crash, which I know is more, even darker and even more of a, you know, almost like a body horror kind of cyberpunk. Wasn't a huge fan of that, but it doesn't mean I didn't like it. When I say I'm not a huge fan, it just means I read it. If I can get through something, I'm somewhat of a fan, because I am not a kind of person who will read a book to its end if I don't like it. That's one of the things you can guarantee for me, whether it be movies and so forth. Usually, not always, but almost always, when it comes to books, if I didn't like it, I didn't finish it. I had to have liked it in some way. Moving on from there, looking at various different things, what do we have? Unfinished Sentence says, from what we know on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X, what's your price prediction? $5.99. I'm just going with that because I don't really have a price prediction, but $5.99 seems fair. And I don't mean fair to us, but I mean seems like a fair guess. I just really don't know exactly what that price will be and what they're doing and what they're offering. I do know, and I think we can all agree, that Microsoft has got that ability to do everything in Game Pass. And I think that that'll be the big differentiator, is how much you can get it for like a payment plan. If it adds in a bunch of stuff and a bunch of value, how many people will get it? Mo says, not a podcast question, but would you consider making a Walking the Walk about God of War? I feel like there's a lot to learn from how Santa Monica reintroduced this franchise. You know, it's funny you ask that. So if anybody doesn't understand what these are, the Walking the Walk videos are usually technical as well as artistic, where I look through it, I gather some data from the developers, and I I just walk through the game. That's why it's called Walking the Walk, which is a terrible name. And it's terrible not because I dislike it. In fact, I think it explains exactly what I'm doing. But, you know, in terms of search, it's not, you know, called analysis or whatever, which is a big thing now, even though nobody really understands what's going on in these developers' heads. So analysis is just sort of bullshit. But I call him Walking the Walks. He's asking about God of War. I got to say, God of War did not impress me nearly as much as everybody else. There's some stuff in it that I think is good, but I do not think that that is, I don't think that that game is as much a walking open world game that befits a Walking the Walk as, let's say, a Red Dead. And I'm not saying it's not better than Red Dead. I'm saying fitting the Walking the Walk format. There is some stuff we could learn for sure. A lot of that's been covered, but I actually don't find that game very interesting from a development standpoint. And there's a couple reasons. One being probably because we already know that character in and out. Whether they changed it or not, we really do. And there's not a lot of mystique there in how it was done versus, let's say, Ghost of Tsushima, where it was brand new. And so to me, a walk in the walk in that was far more interesting. The Audrin Search Party says, with Ghost of Tsushima being fresh on people's minds, how do you think that new games of other well-traveled genres can stand up from the crowd or stand apart from the crowd? Similarly, how Ghost of Tsushima had its own ways of standing apart from games like Assassin's Creed and Shadow of Mordor. It's a good point. I don't know if they will. I don't know if there's enough time for these current crop of games. I don't think that there is enough time for these current crop of games. And I don't necessarily know if we absolutely need them. I think when you look at Assassin's Creed, it's doing its own thing. And when you look at Shadow of Mordor, though we haven't heard about any sequel being made for the Shadow of War and Shadow of Mordor titles, I think it's doing its own thing. I think a lot of people will look at HUD, though. HUD has been looked at for a while. Ghost of Tsushima did its own designs on how you went around the game world. That will for sure be copied by somebody in some way. But I think it was just the elements of the HUD design changes, as well as the fact that it was already a slower-paced game, and then most of your unlocks in that game actually were the result of you doing less rather than more. You didn't have a big action-packed moment, so therefore you got something all the time. It did happen in forts, but in a lot of times you got stuff for writing a haiku, or you got stuff for following a fox around the game world that led you to different places. And to me, that worked when you add everything together. I heard somebody say, well, the fox is just a glorified pointer. Absolutely. And that's exactly what they wanted it to be. If the fox wasn't a glorified pointer, just taking that person's words into account, it would be nothing. It would be a fox in the woods, which we also have ambient lifestyle as well. A lot of times people try to damn something by explaining as if it's less than what somebody else thinks it is, not really realizing that it's not that somebody else thinks it's even more so. They feel that it fits within the larger envelope of the game more so. So for example, the foxes in Ghost of Tsushima, it's not necessarily like those are massively different. It's that they're somewhat different and that they add together with the rest of the title to make everything feel more than the sum of its parts. And we all understand what more than the sum of its parts means. We can pretend we're stupid. We can all sit here and pretend we're stupid and we don't know what that means. But it lessens the entire discussion about games when that happens. You do know what more than the sum of its parts means. You absolutely do. And you know what somebody's saying when they say that that feels special to them. Now, you can say it doesn't feel special to you. That's one thing. And you can pretend like that person doesn't know it's a pointer, but they do. It's just that when you add in the HUD elements and when you add in the fairly sedate way in which the gameplay rolls out, everything mixes and matches together. Even the cinematic moments when you have the standoffs, it all mixes and matches together to feel a bit more than what each separate part is. So I think that we'll see some games do it, but we won't see it for probably a year and a half or two. Wary says devs putting impossible trophies in their games just to laugh at people not being able to attain them. I don't know if that's true. I hate trophies. I hate achievements. I think they're both damning to the video game. I guess a video game development cycle as a whole. I've heard multiple developers say that they've started to develop little parts of the game where they fit those achievements. And I find that just asinine. I hate the idea of them. I think they're ruinous. I would rather have somebody be able to make their own achievement. For example, let's say I go into Ghost of Tsushima and I destroy five forts in less than 5 minutes, right? And the game can track that and says, oh, wow, Carrick in his group is the fastest to have destroyed these five forts in this allotted time. That's the achievement. That to me would be a world changer for me, is personalized achievements based upon whether the game is collecting heat map and data and makes its own or something. But that way there isn't a solid list that everybody sees. You could almost have a challenge list that would pop up via the way people play and people are trying to do stuff, a more organic list. Even if, let's say, the developers have to look at that list and maybe in one day they get 100,000 entries, they start looking and they're like, okay, this person did this crazy thing we didn't expect. This person did this crazy thing. Let's grab three easy ones and two super hard ones and put them as the daily challenges and make it more organic so that that way people aren't buying into just the achievements, because those achievements might change. I find achievement score and trophy hunting ludicrous. I don't know any other way to say it. It doesn't even, to me, it's not even a part of the game. Let's see. Last up, Spooner says, is Ubisoft bold or dumb for releasing Valhalla 2 days before Cyberpunk? They are neither. They are forced. I don't think people realize that Valhalla delayed as well as Cyberpunk. We're at a point now where it's time to shit or get off the pot. So it's not as if they're either. It's that at some point they have to get this out and just say, here's where it's going. They could delay if they wanted to, but I think we're at a point now to where, you know, this is the way it's going to be. I did say this in the podcast that I feel that we saw how this worked out with Titanfall. Titanfall released within a day, if not 2 days, of another huge game. I believe it was Battlefield, and it did horribly. In fact, Titanfall 2 sold on every system less than Titanfall 1, exclusive to the original Xbox, back when the Xbox was having all of its PR issues. So there's a lot of problems there, a lot of problems with its sales, and that shows it. If we see a horrible sale for Valhalla, if we see a lot of issues, and those issues don't come down to something that you can attribute via reviews and or feedback, but more along the lines of burned out or boredom or people not wanting to get it because there's another game, then I would say Ubisoft will look at it and all companies will look at it as something to watch out for in the future. But I think right now they still feel a little comfortable with where they're releasing. Additionally, I do see why people think there's a lot of overlap with Valhalla and Cyberpunk. However, at the same time, I do know, and I would say most of my friends have very specific genres and timelines that they're actually attracted to. They may like their fantasy and Western, but they don't like futuristic. They may like their futuristic and fantasy, but they don't like Westerns, right? They may like futuristic, but they don't like Cyberpunk. They like maybe their Mass Effects. So there's going to be a large group of people also that are into that. We'll just have to see, right? We'll just have to see. And I think that, I don't think they're going to be delayed now, but I think a lot of these companies didn't know who and what was going to delay who and what, so they just went with it. Master Flavor says, paintball or airsoft? Airsoft. So I posted a bunch of pictures in the Discord yesterday of the airsoft. You know, we're setting up the garage. We're getting it set back up. Airsoft is difficult because you have to have friends, right, to do that physically near you, and some of the family members have moved away. It's more difficult to get everybody together. It's always going to be my dream to get people together more often to do it. I love airsoft. I think it's an absolute blast, and I think it's good to physically get out there and get up. We don't do it enough, and it does help. It really does help to get up and get about and start doing things physically. So I'm going to try to release a video or two to the patrons that is about airsoft, shows maybe an unpacking or two of a game or a gun. Sorry, taking a sip here, but we'll just have to see, you know, but I think airsoft is great. I think anything that can get you out and about or get you moving, you know, if it's a rhythm game for you, that's great too. A lot of people don't want to get out and about, don't have the friends. I think with airsoft and paintball, that can be quite difficult, getting somebody who has the same like-minded thought process of how you play the game. I'm very forceful, I would say, in what I want to enforce as rules so that everybody's just having the most fun with not a ton of rules, but nobody's a jackass. Like, we have very specific rules of, like, you know, you're not just going to shoot somebody when you're 5 feet away. You know, you just say you're dead. And if they try to run, you can shoot them. But, you know, we do safety measures like that. We also do stuff where, you know, people get together and we don't require people to have perfect military garb or anything like that. I find that absolutely stupid. I mean, you can do that, but I find it, I don't even call that airsoft, I guess. I call that, that's more of a milsim kind of thing. And those people are great and they have a great time. But a lot of times those groups start to get into this thing where there's a leadership issue where it's just like, you know, well, because I'm the major, or I'm the one giving the rules out in the airsoft game, in our real life, I'm the one giving out the rules too. It's quite weird. So for us, it's more almost like a D&D game where we get together. Sometimes we'll make up a little baby story right there. And we'll be like, all right, so the pilot is down. He's got, you know, just an airsoft handgun. He's got to get to his team who are starting on the other side of the field. This team on this side of the field, you know, is coming towards them. Maybe the bad guy team has full auto. The good guy team only has semi-auto. And the pilot has to get to the good guy team to get a gun from them because all he's got is a handgun. We've done that a couple times. And in fact, I think the pilot won two or three times. I think the pilot ended up taking out the guys with the, you know, with the full auto, which can happen because people get a little machismo in their head, right? They've got a chainsaw spitting out bullets and they're like, yeah, man, I can do it. And then they run out of bullets and they're like, or, well, I call them bullets, but you know what I mean? Pellets. They run out. Baseball gear inside the Discord saying, what's something that someone suggested you try that has had a positive impact or effect on your life? Be it mentally or physically. That is a good question. I would say I am usually 99% of the time the one suggesting things to others because I'm always trying stupid stuff and trying to see, you know, if a new hobby might grab us or what have you. So I don't really know of anything that somebody has, you know, randomly suggested to me. I would say, you know, something like airsoft, there's probably a pretty good chance somebody suggests that to me. Somebody has probably suggested a game or genre, TV shows. I can guarantee you somebody's suggested a TV show. That's definitely had a positive effect on me. But when it comes to like an activity or when it comes to something like that, there really hasn't been a ton unless it's usually within whatever I already am within. So if it's board games, they might suggest a board game, right? If it's D&D friends, they might suggest a role-playing game. If it's, you know, airsofters, they might suggest that kind of thing. But when it comes to fully, completely out and about different stuff, most people don't suggest it, or I don't find it something I haven't already thought of. So somebody will say something like, you know, you should go hiking. Well, I'm not a fan of hiking overall. It's just not for me. So, and I've tried it. So I would have already been able to say, you know, I've tried that. That's not for me. So I think it's just because, like I said, I'm usually the group organizer and I'm usually the one saying, we should try this or try that. I'm the one who found airsoft and I'm like, we should do this, that kind of thing. So I'm always open to it. It just doesn't happen that often. Jeffrey Jarvis says, what's your view on social media being a crucial part of doing something nowadays? I want to possibly try and do a podcast on the side, but the fact I do not give a single fuck about anything on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram feels like there really isn't a point in starting it. Yeah, that's the thing, Jeffrey. So, you know, I didn't really have a Twitter prior to doing YouTube. I think I had it for a little while, but you're absolutely right. It is required. It is required. Your best bet would be get a spouse or a friend to take it over. And what they would do is they would take care of social signals, which is getting it out there. Because if you're going to try a podcast on the side where you don't care to engage in social media, that's really not a podcast. That's really a discussion where you happen to have recorded it, which now makes you just creepy as fuck. So what you want to do, you want to give yourself a chance. Give yourself as many chances as possible. And that means enact friends. You know, if you've got a friend who wants to do the podcast with you and they're social, man, have them name the podcast or have them name the Twitter channel, you know, your podcast name and just have them post your videos on there or whatever you do on there. And the same with anything like Instagram and Facebook. When it comes to you wanting to be there, you know, there's a lot of people who behind the scenes don't do much with their channels. I actually know one person I'm working with right now who doesn't really do anything themselves. They have a PR person who I think was free for a long time, as in they were unpaid. I think they were just doing it because they were a friend. They were posting interactions and they were getting everything together. And the other person, they still haven't even shown their face on camera, you know? So, I mean, you can do it, but you would have to be so energetic and interesting that you would have to have people talking about you. And it's hard to have somebody talk about you if you can't find them. If you put it, even myself, it's hard. When I moved to Twitch, hard move. Barely anybody moves from YouTube to Twitch, right? And I still have people. I can't believe this. I mentioned the move to Twitch We counted one time, it was over 200 times where I mentioned moving to Twitch on reviews and on walking the walks and on the podcasts themselves. And I still, to this day, every time I post something, people be like, why don't these get posted on YouTube anymore? You know, I used to follow you. So they're saying that they followed you back when it was. And you're like, man, you didn't hear that. So, and that's somebody who has a following. So I would say you have to do it, guy. You have to do it. Social media is a crucial part. But you don't have to be the one who does it yourself. You just have to have it be done for your brand, if that's what you want to call it. And I would say there's many ways to do that, whether it be friends or you hire somebody to post for you, or you just post for yourself and don't look. I think you would end up looking. So I think probably just having a friend. Let's see. Bionic's asking a question for the normal podcast, so we won't hit that. Reynolds, what's your opinion on the amount of games as a service type games being released? If the rate of them coming out carries on for the next 2 or 3 years, will there be a break, or will there ever be a break? So games as a service, he's probably talking about the fact that the Justice League game, I don't know if you guys saw this, but it also looks like to be a game service, you know, style game where you play it and they continually deliver to you content. You know, I don't know. I'm gonna be honest and say, I don't know. If they succeed, then we're fine. But we have had some major failures. One of the things people don't really want to admit is games as a service has actually had a multitude of failures. If you consider Fallout 76 in that and not just an MMO, it's also failed. It's doing better now, but you get my drift. It failed day one. You have Anthem. You have a lot of companies who are looking at it going, maybe this isn't the best bet. It's in fact why EA used to say, oh, there's no such thing as single player games. They're not a big deal anymore. Who's now switched back to single player games because what they thought was going to happen didn't happen. So the sales do matter. How well a game does, you know, when it comes to sales do matter. I don't know about games as a service. I think we're at this weird point right now where everybody's trying to explain that their game is a game as a service, but they don't really understand that most people, let me explain this in the easiest way I can, because this has been bothering me for a while. It's a good question. Here's what fucking bothers me. Games as a service is mimicked in the same way as Netflix, TV shows and movies as a service. That's sort of how it came about. It's no longer DLC. It's no longer expansions. It's game as a continued service. Here is why that bothers me. Because it's not. Netflix has continually different TV shows that you could watch forever, and you would never catch up, right? And that's still $15, $9.99 if you have non-HD. Most of these games as a service are actually more expensive, or in some way have things that require more than that $15, and it's just that one game. Meaning that a good deal of it is actually repetitive content. So let me give you an example. Let's say you just liked action adventure and you went to Netflix. You could never actually watch all of the content because more content would be coming in. You would quite literally never be able to finish that content. But with a video game, you would quite easily be able to, let's say, fight all the enemy types and see all the locations in a very short amount of time. Because it takes 4 to 5 years to make something somebody can destroy in 20 to 40 hours easily. That's because of the way that things are put together and the fact that there are far less publishers and developers than there are movie makers and TV shows, and the way those TV shows have a vested long-term tail built into an incredible archive of original titles that have been out for years and are moving on to these games or these TV shows as a service. So games as a service, for example, Avengers, when Avengers comes out, it doesn't matter if they've done double the work, 8 years. That will mean in a very short amount of time, people will be done with the actual content. Now, what do you have next? You have repetitive content that is to grind for gear. That actually is what you would term as a filter. So for example, when you go to YouTube or when you go to Google and you type in a search parameter, it's going to take every search ever by popularity, time frame from the moment the internet started and blurb it out. But then you enter a filter called time and you say within the last week. Now you're getting a filter that filters within you the last week. Well, that's the way games as a service on video games are currently working, the filter being the world. So Avengers, the Avengers beta, the filter is Avengers beta. That's your filter, the Avengers. That's all the content you will see. You won't magically go in one day and find a fucking completely different character, right? You're not going to go in and suddenly there's a spaceship from the Expanse in your Avengers game. That's not how it works. So these games as a service, the reasons why they overtly, and I think we've seen a large number of failures or a large number of, I would say, disgruntled people getting into them, is because their lack of content isn't necessarily a laziness issue. Lazy devs is sort of a stupid misnomer kind of thing. A lot of devs aren't lazy. It's the sheer way in which resources are used and the way stuff has to be constructed. So I don't know. I will just say that I think games as a service is actually a terrible name, because they're really not a service after a very short amount of time. And they've tried to pretend that, you know, that it's different than an MMO. But I got to tell you guys, the way MMOs are delivered and the various different ways, free MMOs, you know, free with cosmetics, blah, blah, blah. A lot of these, I'm sorry, guys, you can't tell me aren't just games as a service, right? I mean, it's called an MMO, but that's what it is. And that's why when you title something as games as a service, it means something different than MMO. And that's because a lot of times, like, let's say Avengers, they're saying it's not an MMO because there isn't a major place for everybody to go and congregate. And so therefore, it's not massively multiplayer. Well, that's true. But I don't know if games as a service is the proper term you want to use for it. I find it not accurate. And I don't find them very successful. And I think a lot of that is naming and the fact that a lot of people don't really, you know, I get that there are people who are playing EVE Online still and loving it. But when you look at everything that's been released, and then you look at the 10 to 20 to even 100 amazingly big fan driven games continually, whether it be MMO or games as a service, it's a stunningly high failure rate. Stunningly high. That, I think, is the issue. Is no one wants to admit that. No one wants to admit that if you do not win in the games as a service, you either change your service completely or you're gone. And I find the name, I find the entire idea is just, it's a hodgepodge and it doesn't make sense narratively. My God, that was a long-winded answer to your question, but there was your answer. Let's go with more games. Molotov Michelle says, what game would you get on board on the PS5 hype train right now? Tell me this and I will make it happen. I think with the PS5, Xbox is the same as there isn't one. I don't think any system is worth the $500 or $460 it would cost. So let's say I like Dragonlance. So let's say they made a Dragonlance game. It's my dream, right? It's the dream Dragonlance game. It's still not worth $460, which would be the $400 for the system and the $60 to play the game. It's just not worth it. So right now, nothing. I don't think either has really shown. I think Xbox has shown some awesome stuff with Game Pass. But other than that, they really haven't shown something that I said this in the last podcast, I personally would not be telling anybody right now to ever purchase these. I don't think in any way, shape, or form currently they're worth it unless you're brand new. And then you have to look at value versus, you know, possible IPs in the future. And then at that point, you also have Microsoft's IPs. It's a really confusing time when it comes to games.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Calm Aubrey says, your dogs are frequent guests on the podcast. Would love to know more about them. Let's see. Loki is a Chihuahua pug bulldog, which is a unique dog. Super small head, super wide body like a bulldog. He's old as fuck. And he was getting old at a young age, maybe 9 or 10. For a smaller dog, it's pretty crazy. Well, I say small, but he was still in the 40, 45 pound range. But he was sort of older. He was sort of getting old, sort of getting crotchety. We took him into the vet, and he's had a couple issues. Like one time he tried to jump over a fence and got his gut caught on a spike, and it tore him open. He had to have 77 stitches across his gut. It was just open like a marsupial flap. It was just disgusting. He's had some issues, right? He was a stray dog for 6 months. He still has those tendencies, but he's a great dog, really just a really good communal dog. So we took him to the doctor for a checkup, and they were like, you know what, his thyroid is pretty low for a dog of his age. So we could put him on a little bit of thyroid medication. And, you know, I have no issue with that, you know, whatever. So it wasn't expensive. So I was like, yeah, let's put him on it and, you know, maybe spry him up if that's what he wants. And it is crazy. So a lot of times with humans, especially because of our desire for food and our ability to have opposable thumbs and open the fridge ourselves, a lot of people on thyroid medication don't lose weight because they just eat more, you know, because eating isn't always related to a thyroid issue. You are every person in the world to be like, I have a slow thyroid. That's why I'm 600 pounds. It's like, it doesn't really have anything to do with the cheeseburger, the fucking whole chicken and the 88 Oreo packages you just ate. Are you sure? But with a dog, they can't get into that, right? So you're feeding them the same amount. He slimmed up dramatically. It was crazy. He was heavy at the time when we got him. He probably lost 15 pounds, which for a dog of that size is crazy. And he acts like he's like six. Only thing is he's going deaf. You can definitely tell. He's starting to get nervous when a sound goes off because he's not hearing the whole range, that kind of thing. And you have to do the old thing where you yell at him a couple times before they turn. Ming is on his last leg, figuratively. He's up there in years. He's 12, 13, I think. Almost completely blind. You know, he's doing well. I'm watching him constantly, daily. I think the only thing you can do is take care of your animals if they're in pain a lot. You know, watching him, he's still getting around, still motating, but at a much, much slower pace, still chasing the ball occasionally. But, you know, I think he's definitely, it's coming to the end for him. And he's had an amazing life. The guy's absolutely a crazy man. Fits the world and the small home that he lives in very well. He was a black lab terrier mix with a couple other things. Super high energy, freakishly smart. Zen is a bulldog, Great Dane. So he is a big-headed freak. He's massive. And also the biggest pussy you've ever seen in your life. The dude was afraid of linoleum, which is the tile you put in bathrooms and kitchens. His little tiny claws hit it when we brought him home, and he was so afraid of the sound, of the tick-tick-tick-tick sound, that he wouldn't go into the linoleum. You'd have to pick him up and walk him out. And then he got onto the deck, and he freaked out because the deck made a sound, too. He must have, I don't know if maybe he came from, you know, a carpeted area. When we picked him up at the pet store, he was in a box with carpet at the bottom, you know, to keep them warm if they wanted to sleep and stuff like that. So I don't know, but he's awesome. Gentle, one of the greatest dogs in the world, just an absolute blast. And then Lau, he's the youngest. It's probably, I think Zen is 9 or 10. And for a big dog like him, he's over 100 pounds, close to 100 pounds. That's pretty old, getting on the older side. Lau is in the set. I think Lau just turned 6 or 7, and he's a black lab shepherd. He's got a couple little mixes, probably some wolfhound in him too, from the way he sounds and sometimes the way his face looks. But yeah, he's my bro. He is super loving, one of the like most caring dogs that I've ever had. He's just an absolute blast. So those are my dogs. We also have a cat, Sensei. She's my wife's. Not a huge fan of cats, but she's pretty cool. She's pretty cool. It's not that I'm not a fan of cats. It's just that, you know how you get it. It's like everybody's got a different pet that they kind of like, and cats just don't offer the loyalty and the sheer ability to travel, I would say, if I wanted to travel, that a dog does. And I've just always been a little bit more, a little closer to dogs. I've always liked cats. I have no issue having them, and I enjoy them around, but I just, you know, I don't think of them as much as like a big time pet for me. Bossa Nova says, which is the best way to support, all things being equal, live podcast or postponed listen? If we can't catch it live, which brings you the best return? Audio with Spotify. Oh, that's true. Audio with Spotify, audio, Apple or Anchor, or video with Twitch. You know, that's absolutely for sure the podcast audio. So Spotify and iTunes, crazy return on those, by the way. People listening to these, if you get a chance, spread it out to your friends. You know, tell your friends about it. Post about it, whatever you can. This really does help the channel. Strangely enough, helps the channel way more than I thought it would. Twitch is great because people can subscribe and that kind of stuff. But if you're talking about just views and so forth, it is absolutely, there's just no hesitation to mention the audio. I wish I got into the audio side of this way earlier, because I think when you look at channels, like you look at an IGN, well, let's remove IGN. You look at individual people. If you look at individual people like a Joe Rogan, or in our, you know, realm in video games, you look at somebody like Colin Moriarty or what have you, everybody's got their own thing, right? Some people may get way more views on YouTube, way less on Twitch. They might have more audio followers. They might have a bigger patron, right? I've always felt that patron was the place where it seems like a lot of people are like, okay, he buys his games. This is a person I'm going to give to patron. So my patron has always been very robust. Well, it hasn't always been. It was actually terrible until YouTube did some shit. And I told everybody, I'm like, listen, patron's the way to go, because the others weren't that good. Now I get good views on YouTube, but I get demonetized, right? So many of those don't count, or they're in an adult level, ads, so they don't count. And then Twitch, you know, we're just doing the Friday posts on Twitch, and so it does okay, but it doesn't do great or anything. But if you add them all together, I think almost everybody you look has that way. Even if you look at like an Angry Joe who streams on Twitch, sometimes he's got less viewers than I've had on podcasts, depending on what I've covered. So it's not like moving between the two sees ultimate success for anyone, right? Anyone. And I know somebody I'm talking to on Twitch who has way more viewers than I do on Twitch. It's ridiculous. They're per video when they're streaming, but they have less than a half of what I have on YouTube and nothing on audio and no patron, right? So everybody's got different stuff. So it's a good question on who supports what and how everybody supports. So I appreciate that. But I would say audio for sure. It's definitely the way to do it. Let's see. Steeman says, forgive me if this has been asked before. Given that Apple doesn't want to play nice with game streaming platforms, will any of the iOS users make the switch to Android or Windows? Oh, so that's probably for the bigger group. I'll say this. If I was with iOS, I certainly wouldn't, because I think that's a small thing. But I also am really surprised by this. So that people know what's going on, Microsoft was going to put iOS streaming on, had it pretty much already guaranteed, and then at some point, Apple pulled the plug and was like, we don't want these games on our service. And they had some weird explanation for why. And it's become this big hubbub now of, and you can tell Microsoft is sort of put off, you know, it's just back and forth. We don't know exactly what it all means. But I think especially with Microsoft, you know, they're trying to hit everywhere. They're like, you can buy the hardware or you can stream. You can be on the PC. You can get your Game Pass. It really doesn't matter where you play as long as you can play our games, and we're going to allow streaming on iOS devices. And with Apple saying no, I'm really confused on how that's going to work out for them. It's a good question. Great Ape says, do you have any experience with different motorsport vehicles, motorcycles, ATVs, dirt bikes, jet skis? I do with all of those, but not snowmobiles, which is the other one. Motorcycles, ATVs, dirt bikes, jet skis. We had all of those. One of my friends, Brad, had a jet ski. We had an absolute blast on the couple times we rode that. And nice thing about a jet ski, his was a sit-down one, Sea-Doo, as they're called. It was nice because it steered like a three-wheeler, which is putting the weight on the outside to get the to get it to turn correctly, throwing the weight almost the opposite of what you would in a dirt bike in some ways, especially with your ass end. So translating between those two was quite easy. Any funny stories? Man, I got hundreds. ATVs and motorbikes are an absolute blast. Like the crazy shit. Like I remember I would be with my brother and we'd be out in the woods, and you always go in the worst possible day. That's the best part about motorbiking, right? That's the best part about ATVs is Pacific Northwest, storming, lightning, you know, clouds, thunder, everything, gray, barely able to see. That is when you go three wheeling. It's the best time. So it would be the worst weather you could possibly imagine. Thunder, lightning crackling in the sky. And we'd be like, it'd be like 9 p.m. on a Saturday. We'd be like, dude, let's go three-wheeling. So we had about a quarter mile of pavement we'd have to ride on. And then we went up on this gravel road and then up into this massive forest we had near our house. We call it behind our house, but near our house. And we would always see a hill and be like, we can make it. And we would try. And half the time you'd flip over backwards, three-wheeler roll. I don't know how we're alive. The crashes we had were ridiculous. I mean, they were, and fast. We didn't know how fast we were going until later when one of my friends bought a four-wheeler that had a speedometer on it, because all of our bikes had no speedometers. They were dirt bikes, trail bikes. There was no speedometer on that goddamn thing, like it just at all. And ATVs, I don't know if any three-wheelers had speedometers ever. At least I don't remember, but this four-wheeler did. And I remember we were riding that one time and I passed my friend in the four-wheeler and I wrecked. And he was like, dude, we were going like 45 miles an hour. And you just peel over on your side, roll, scratch across the pavement, dirt, debris, get back up. And I'm telling you, our entire safety measure was rarely a helmet, unfortunately. That was really stupid, but we rarely wore helmets. I had a big, really, really thick jacket, and we'd be wearing friggin' sweats. Because our belief was, I don't know what our belief was. It wasn't a smart belief. Whatever it was that had to do with sweats, probably because it felt like we could, you know, leap off the three-wheeler or four-wheeler if we needed to as quick as possible, because it wasn't like pants or motorbike clothes. I have no clue. You know, looking back on it, I'm just sitting here going like, I don't know why we did that. But we did crazy stuff. It was just a blast. It's one of the best experiences I ever had, where you would have, where an activity becomes the entire weekend, where you would have friends come over and you'd be like, what are you going to do? And you'd be like, I'm going to go ride four-wheelers and three-wheelers. Like, that's what was so cool, is you didn't need anything. There was no exact plans. The fact that you had a place to go, you would drive up behind, we drove up behind this gate. And once you go behind this gate, you had like 30 or 40 miles of roads and trails. And there was never anybody there. I would say right until I moved out, there was never, you know, you would occasionally see a truck, rarely though. And there was something about it where you could invite friends over for the weekend and there was no plan. It was just like, let's eat and then let's just go three-wheeling and you'd be gone. It was a great time, man. I wish that was even possible now. I think for a lot of places it's not even possible, because there isn't a lot of places you can explore anymore, because everybody's gone to those places to explore. So they're all condensed. There's four more people. I don't even know what's behind this place anymore if I were to go back there, because we sold the house. I am between larger games at the moment. So many choices. I'll try something for a couple hours, but then put it down. Sucks learning new systems and mechanics. I just want to get to the point where I'm hooked. So I got to tell you, this is something I've been having a blast with. You guys know me and my love for DC Universe Online. Last night, I was just like, man, I don't want to jump into a game. I don't have any real mental ability for D&D right now, or putting a story together, or getting some supplies together for that. So I was like, what should I do? And I loaded up DC Universe Online. I played for like 7 hours last night. It's great to have those games that you know, right? This is something that's been happening. We've talked about it on the normal podcast with Johnny, where Johnny's like, man, I'm finding myself enjoying Monster Hunter a lot and not going to other games. And I got to tell you, I get it. And as Great Bape's saying here, he says, you know, that point to where you jump into a new game and there's some new system to learn. At some point, your brain just is like, dude, I don't know if I want to learn another system. And I got to tell you, this shit pops up a lot for me. Dark Souls, Surge, Sekiro, these are the big games where it pops up, because those systems are required to learn. So if I jump into a game where it's not super difficult, the requirement to know every single in and out of the system is really not there. The requirement to know them and be able to explain them and to know them deeply is due to me doing the review. It's not due to requirement to play them and live, because most of them aren't that difficult. But you jump into a Sekiro, right? To review it, you're going to need to know it. And to play the damn thing, you're going to need to know it. And it can be rough, man. It can be rough. It's like sometimes you just don't want to do it. And I get that with TV shows and movies too, where I'll tell somebody about a show and they're like, man, I don't want to get into another show with 12 seasons. You know, it's just your brain at some point, there's a lot there. And so a lot of us return to the same things. And I don't see anything wrong with that, but I do get where you're coming from. I do. I'm right there with you. It's definitely happened. I don't get burned out when it comes to reviewing or anything like that, but I do definitely notice that it's just a lot. It's a lot to bounce from one to the other, to the other, to the other. He's also asking, watching any new shows or movies recently? Last week, I finished the last couple episodes of The Boys. Ended up being better than I remembered when I first started watching it. Then saw a trailer for next season, next month. So neat timing for me, I guess. Yeah, so when it comes to new shows, not really new shows or movies. We're rewatching Longmire, which is a slow version of Justified. If you don't know either one of those, consider them somewhat Western or cowboy movies or TV shows. I'm rewatching West Wing and Newsroom. Both have really good dialogue that I like to track. And we're watching, of all things, The Originals, which is the pseudo spinoff sequel to Vampire Diaries. The reason why I watch those is because I'm a big World of Darkness fan, Vampire Bloodlines. Vampire Masquerade, the video games, but they were also RPGs. And Vampire Diaries is actually, it's not necessarily based in the same world, but they took a shit ton of tropes. And the writers even were like, especially after the first season, It is still a 90210 style of show, right? It's still a CW style of show, but they took the darkness from those worlds and actually mixed them in. And so it's far darker than you would assume. And it's been quite enjoyable to actually watch them, because while they do deal with teen angst, of course, so do normal TV shows and movies now with adults in them. Half the time you're like, dude, seriously? Like, you see a movie about supposed adults and they're acting in a way where you're like, nobody would do that. You would just turn to the person. You wouldn't walk out and repeat yourself as you walk out the door, be like, this is the last time you'll see me. Last time you will see me. And you walk out. Like, what the fuck? What the fuck? People don't do that, right? But we see it in movies, even movies with adults. So with Vampire Diaries, I have no problem watching it because they're teens, number one, so I assume they're dumber. And number two, they turn the darkness up. And originals turn the darkness up. Like, originals was like double dark. And it involves the original vampires from the Vampire Diaries in their own story. It's actually been quite enjoyable. A lot of good actors, too. Not, I don't mean thespians, right? They're not a Peter O'Toole kind of actor. I just mean they're fun to watch, you know, even if they're over the top. Klaus is hilarious. He's basically he's this out of control rampage hybrid vampire werewolf. The dude is like all the bad friends you've ever had. All that, those friends who do shit, and then whenever shit goes bad and people are mad at them, they get doubly mad back at the person for being mad at them. And you're like, dude, are you not getting it? This person's mad at you because you did something stupid. You can't be doubly mad back at them because they're mad at you. Like, what the fuck? And he does it every episode. It's hilarious. And I just love to watch it. And it's like every 3 seconds, he's like, brother, because he's got brothers and sisters. It's all about family. And he's just, every time he walks in the room, brother. And I just fucking have to repeat it to, I'm sure, the chagrin of everybody in the home. But those have been a blast to watch. What else? Watching the history on the Roman Empire from Great Courses. I'm doing a masterclass on writing for Aaron Sorkin, and I'll probably do a masterclass on Viking life probably prior to Valhalla, you know, just to sort of get me in the mood for it. I like to take classes as much as I can. I'm always doing something. I'm also doing a bunch of writing lately for reasons I couldn't quite describe to you. Moving on from there, I want to know what you guys think of life. How's everything going? Twitter. No, we'll go with hashtag life goals. If you got this far, I want to know what your life goals are. How are you doing on them? Life goals are hard to hit, man. You come up with some goal and then everything gets in your way and you realize, you know, was that goal maybe a long-term goal and I put it in a short-term time frame, or was it not a big enough goal for me to sort of capture onto? I'm a big fan of goals because I just like them. I don't necessarily even have to check them off my list. I just sort of dig them when you can sit up in the morning and be like, I fucking did this or I did that. And it's difficult, especially with the world the way it is, because there's this rigmarole, there's this churning of the gears that's happening all the time now. You wake up and it's like bad news, bad news, bad news. Another disaster happened. It's fucking hot. It's like living right next to the ball sack of some bicyclist in a triathlon right now in my home area. It is so hot and humid and nasty. It's uncomfortable. And so it's difficult sometimes to come up with goals because you're just like, dude, your goal's getting through the day, right? My goal is, you know, to not stroke out from the freakish amount of heats and humidity that are in my area or something like that. And it's difficult for me. What I did and what I have an issue with is I'll come up with a goal and then I'll lose the energy and I'll forget. I won't forget the goal, but I'll forget like all the steps or the reason why I had the goal. So for example, one of my fans on my cooler on my PC went bad and it didn't really do anything other than I heard it going bad. I heard the bearings going out. So I'm like, okay, no problem. So originally I thought it was the entire system. So I go out and I buy the new system and I buy the fans and I'm all ready. And then I realize, you know what? It's just the fans. So what I'm going to do to get this running, at least for now, because it seems the pump is working, all this stuff, so I'm going to replace the fans, put my new fan controller in there and get this all running. And then you know, you've got stuff in a box and then you forget where the box is. And then a week later, you're looking for the box and you find a box from another project that's a completely different box that you don't even know. And it's just like, it's like seven, like what's in the box? I'm not lying. I walk into this room we have, we call it the Asian room because that's the way it's colored and designed. It's got like, you know, really cool art on the sides. It's all Japanese inspired. And I go in there and this is our storage room. And no lie, there's probably 10 boxes on the floor, each in some way attached to a goal. And, you know, I'll start a goal. This isn't all me. I like to joke that it is, but most of the time what happens is I start a goal and then a game company emails me and says, we want you to cover a game. I'm like, all right. So, you know, you put the goal away because that's your job. So I will get in there and I'll start looking at something, and no lie, I'll open up and I'll be like, what the fuck? What is this? So a couple weeks ago, I open up a box. It is filled with plastic sleeves and rubber bands. And I got to tell you, you could have filled that with fucking chipmunk parts and recycled cans, and I still would have understood less about why that box was in that room. I looked at that box for like an hour going, what in the hell is this box filled with rubber bands and plastic sleeves for? And I'm like, okay, you know, I have no clue what this is for. I've got rubber bands above the fridge. That's sort of like our junk area. You put some, you know, little box up there. You got your rubber bands, your glue, your tape, you know, just a lot of people have a junk drawer. We have one of those as well. So I'm like, what the fuck is this? So I pull it out and I start looking at it, and rubber bands, they're all sorted and shit, right? For sizes. And I'm like, damn, I don't remember doing any of this. And then I'm like, you know what? I don't think I did this. So I talk to my wife and I find out, of course. And you might have guessed this already because of the words I was using, but I wasn't thinking those words when I started. It's obviously for sorting board game and card game stuff, right? So I figure that out. I figure the sleeves out. Now, I'm not a fan of sleeves, which is why I was confused. I'm just not a fan of sleeves for cards. I find shuffling more difficult, everything. And the games I play aren't collectible, so you don't really need those cards. What I find was, at some point, I must have just bought a pack for this, and it came with those sleeves. But I've got all these rubber bands, so we spent, you know, a couple hours sorting, because I had to figure out what games now I even wanted to sort, because I have these board games sitting around. I'm like, well, which game was it that I thought required a specialized sorting system for the cards, right? Because I have a bunch of board games. Many of these board games have 6-7 boxes, and they're huge board games. Brimstone has like 5 boxes. Thousands of cards if you want to play all the expansions. Talisman, as I'm sure a lot of people you guys know, Talisman is one of my favorite games of all time. That game, it's got like 12 expansions, plus I think I have like 31 fan expansions where I've printed out the cards. So we get that figured out, and I start looking through another box, and in this box is, no lie, just broken up Transformers. Broken. They're all smashed. Their arms are missing. Their heads are missing. I'm like, the fuck is this? And then I realize it's for the Carrick crate that I give out. It's because I was gluing Transformers together with random parts like Frankensteins and giving them out as a gag gift for the Carrick crates. So we're going through here, right? And we're looking through these boxes, just the most random shit you could ever imagine in these boxes. And I find a mixtape. This is how old some of these boxes are. I find a mix. Well, it's not a mixtape. It's a mix CD, but it's a CD. And it's got my audio mixes on it. And I must have been giving it to somebody, or it was for myself. And I decide, hey, man, I'm going to listen to this. Like, what music's on here? Because I have no, it literally says like mix number 3, right? So first of all, that means 1 and 2 are out there nebulous in the world somewhere. If they're not in a landfill, somebody's wondering what the fuck's going on. Because I listen to 3 and I've got like, and this is me, by the way, this is how I listen to music. And this is why a lot of people think I'm nuts. But no lie. It starts off with Rob Zombie, Dragula, and goes to Landslide, Fleetwood Mac, and then jumps to like Celine Dion, and then jumps to Def Leppard, and then jumps to like LL Cool J, and then jumps to House of Pain, Jump Up, Jump Up. And it just continues doing this. And to me, in my brain at that time, that all made sense. And I'm listening to it, and to me, it all made sense. And I was like, why does this make sense? I don't know. I'm sure there was a word shared in all of those songs where I'm like, okay, you know, this all makes sense. But that's the kind of stuff I find in that room. And that's where my goals are, swinging this back to goals. That's how my goals get messed up, guys. You know, you got to, if you have a goal, if you're like me, where you have a job that can randomly interrupt your goals, you have to set a better system in place than I have. And I think for me, what I've started doing is I snipped my goals into even smaller ones, ones I can get done when I think of them. So I have like short-term goals, which are like the day goals. I just wake up. I may not have it the night before I wake up, and I'm like, what do I need to do today? Your typical to-do list. That's my short-term. And then, or that's my short-term, I guess, as you call it. And then the short-term is like that weekend, you know, where maybe I know that for the next 2 days, I'm not going to take any jobs. And then your mid and long-term, you have to set out, and you have to figure out a way to be able to do them, guys. You have to, it's difficult, man. It is so difficult to do those. Goals are so hard. And they're hard now because you wake up, you think you're going to do a goal, and like the explosion in Beirut happened. And you're just sitting there going like, man, I don't feel like doing my goal today. I feel like talking to, you know, friends, making sure they're okay or whatever, if they live there, or you have friends of friends, that kind of thing. It's so weird right now, man. It's so difficult. It's just, we're inundated by so much data and so much bad news and stuff like that. That's why a lot of times, man, you just got to turn that shit off and just not look at it and not listen to it. Because in the past, I think it was world news, right? It was like news you got around the world. And then it became world and local news as technology increased. And then it became work and local, and then filtered news where you could choose what type of news you wanted. Now, because of reality TV and the reality stuff, you're getting other people's detritus, other people's refuse from their shitty lives into yours. Maybe you're in a healthy relationship or whatever, but you're hearing about like six other movie stars or stars breaking up and cheating on each other and stuff like that. And what's weird is, if you're an empathetic person, those can overlay on top of you, and they can, you know, it doesn't mean it affects yours. I'm just saying that it's within that same brain space. It's a pretty crazy time, man. It's a pretty crazy time, because there's just so much data that can come into us, and it can be rough. You know, it can definitely be rough. I repeated that twice on purpose, so I was a little bit like a teen walking out of a room. You'll never see me again. You will never see me again.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What else do we got going on? Oh yeah, somebody asked me about other hobbies. One of the other hobbies I love is putting together lightsabers. It's slightly expensive, so I don't do it very often, but there's a lot of websites where you can buy lightsaber parts and the speakers and the systems and the chips inside. And I've put together, I'm looking right now, I think I've got three here that I've put together in the last couple of years. And that's been quite enjoyable. Basically, what happens is, these companies, due to 3D printing and, of course, lathe work with aluminum, they're able to basically print out all kinds of crazy stuff and to make you all kinds of crazy stuff. And you can basically go to these websites and you can look up the pommel, the hilt, you know, the cross guard, the grips, all these kind of different situations and steps that you want, and gradients and looks and colors. And then, as long as you know what pieces you need, you buy those pieces and you get them to your house and you put together your own unique one, which is very cool, because, you know, as just a fan of the way they look and stuff like that, I love this. You know, of course, they're not real lightsabers. Well, they do make sound and you can use them, but what I mean is, they don't chop shit. The reason why I bring that up is because I find them pretty expensive as a hobby. And that's one of the big problems I think we all have with hobbies, right? Is that, especially right now, man, you know, things are so expensive when it comes to hobbies. Things are so, it's more itemized and it's more idealized than it's ever been, but it's also more expensive than it's ever been, or can be, at least. You know, you can still get into games if you like particular games at a cheaper price. But let's say if you look, you know, outside of gaming, it can be pretty expensive, man. It can be pretty expensive. I mean, if you even look at D&D and you look at the cost of, and I love D&D, man. I love sitting down and playing games. But let's say you want to sit down, you know, you grab your Dungeon Master's book from whatever game world, you grab that thing, and then suddenly one of your players is really into it, and they're like, well, I want to get the player guide. And you're like, well, shit, if you get the player guide, I have to have the player guide, because I need to know what you're talking about in the player guide. So the DM has to have it, or you share it, right? But that, you know, these books aren't cheap. $29.99 is a totally normal price for those kind of guides. And then pretty soon, as you can see, you raise up in price quite easily and quite quickly. I did talk about this in the podcast. I was really surprised. I guess there's something, I still don't understand it. I'm reading a little bit tonight about this, but I guess there's a big hubbub about changing everything in D&D so that it's not about races anymore. Supposedly people are saying that ogres were based on black people, I guess, which I had never heard of in my life and nor thought of. But supposedly, that's the big thing, is that either people think that or it was that. From what I've looked at and seen, nobody's ever said that or thought it in the past couple of years. It sort of came up recently, but people have been bothered by it. And they're like, we want to change it so that, from what I sort of understand, that they're not races, they're species, which actually makes sense, Now, I think the reason why races fits for a lot of people is because an elf looks like a human, but they're taller and they have pointy ears, right? So I think it probably made sense whenever they made it. That just was the word they wanted to use. And I would say that for the average person, race makes more sense word-wise in a D&D game than species, just because they may not know what species means. But I'm not one who's going to fight people learning more. So I'm actually, you know, I have no issue with that change. I have no issue with keeping it the same either, but I have no issue with that change if that's what D&D wants to do. I don't know if every, you know, Dungeons & Dragons or role-playing game is going to do this. But I guess it's a big deal. And I was trying to figure out, like, how it started or what the deal was, but supposedly they're going to change that. But another thing I saw, which was weird to me, was that they were basically, that there's a big push that those species, at least from what I'm reading, don't make any changes whatsoever on the character, meaning everybody can be everything, which I think everybody can be everything is a thing, but I think working against the weaknesses that your species might have is probably one of the cooler parts. For example, if I look like a troll, if I'm a half troll, let's say, and I look like a half troll, I would want in a game where half trolls are not considered the ideal of beauty, you know, like we're half trolls, you know, we look a certain way, right? We look all roughed up and shit. I would like them to have to work against those ideals. And so I don't have an issue with like an appearance rating where that appearance rating could matter if I, you know, and especially a half, it might matter to both trolls who may be like, you're a bastard, as well as humans to be like, you're a half troll, right? But from what I'm reading, at least from what I can parse, people are not wanting that anymore. They want like dwarves to be able to run just as fast as elves and elves to be able to, like, I don't know, do whatever dwarves can do, which is, yeah, I'll have to read on it more. It was really confusing because I was like, well, that, where are we at now? What are we going to do? I mean, like, how are we going to differentiate? I personally believe that the differences in D&D games and the races or species, whatever word you want to use, that's one of my favorite parts to play off of, because I feel that the weaknesses inherent that we choose, whether it's even a race, let's say you choose a bad dexterity. This is something that I've been against, and I've seen multiple systems in place to stop this. A lot of systems are in place where you can't have a bad score. You can't. Like, they'll, like, for a 1D or 118 level kind of thing, they'll roll 3d6, and you can't accept a number like lower than 12 or 13. Like, that's ridiculous. That just makes no sense at all. It makes no sense at all. And I've heard people say, well, it's not fun to play a thief with low dexterity. And I'm like, no, dude, it's the most fun. It's absolutely the greatest thing. It is not the low dexterity that will matter at that point. It is the player's intelligence for figuring out how to offset the choice that has been made and the whatever hampering score that they have. That is actually the juice. The juice, for instance, is the battle. For example, if you notice and look, when you look at like Rocky, the movie, you know, everybody thought he couldn't make it. He was a left-handed. He was considered dumb, like all those kind of things. And he used those to achieve greatness. That to me is what is awesome, is those weaknesses never went away. Heart mattered more. He was never super intelligent. I mean, he can barely talk in half those movies. And Sylvester Stallone did a great job of not really smartening him up. They lose all their money, in fact, because they trust their money to Polly. I think that's in, what is that, in number 5, where they like trust their money to an absolute Joe Bob and he goes and loses it all. To me, that the juice is not always having the best of something. And I don't know, man. To me, it seems like, especially when I see these scores, where I saw a big discussion about this where people were like, you know, I can't believe you guys aren't letting people reroll anything that's a 12 or lower. And I'm just like, on a 1 to 18, everybody's going to be in that little small section? Really? I don't know. In fact, we had, and you can make your own systems for this. We had a really cool system, which was basically, if you did get a really low score, for every 3 points below a certain score, you were able to choose a perk, basically a hardship perk. And it wasn't always a good one, but you could choose a hardship perk for that character. So, for example, let's say your charisma was super low. You could choose a hardship perk. Like, the reason why it's low is because, you know, maybe you were tortured when you were younger, or maybe you were a slave or something like that at the time. And maybe you worked in the mines or whatever. So you've got, you know, your hands are, you know, all gnarled up and, you know, maybe covered in some kind of thicker skin, that kind of stuff. And you could sort of choose that, and you could choose something that maybe gave you a plus one to hitting somebody or something. You could, and even though you would still have that negative that was still there, but you got sort of a hardship bonus. And that hardship bonus, I think, adds flavor, because almost every book I've ever read, whether it be fantasy or real life, if that character is a middling character, like, I don't give a shit. I just don't know of anything in the world I've cared about if the character is average everything. If they're 12 to 18 everything, I'm like, well, that character is not interesting to me. They're actually more interesting if they're either super smart and weak, right? Or you know, have a super high number in something, or a super low one. And in fact, originally, when all this stuff was made, the idea of having super low and super high was considered to be one of the strengths of it, because most people, not everybody, but most people are not jack of all trades. They really aren't. Most people, you know, whether they be super high efficient nerds, aren't necessarily charismatic. I actually personally don't believe that a number of nerds, including myself, have become more charismatic over the years versus more nerds being popular over the years. Like, when your group is that group, right? When your group is that group, there's a little bit less of a notice of an outlier. And so, I don't know. I just feel like the best times are when I don't have something working for me, and I have to decide. And it's tough. It's tough in real life, man. When something doesn't go for you, and you have to figure out a way to crawl yourself out of it. I lived in my car for not a long time, a week or 2 weeks or something like that. So I was only homeless for a short amount of time. I've been almost homeless a couple times, but this was where I truly was. I was living in my car, had a actual dial, you know, wind up clock for the alarm to go to work. And, you know, I had to figure out, I was like, what am I going to do? You have to scrounge. You have to figure out exactly what you're going to do to get out of that. And some people get out of it, some people don't. But I think that's the rub. I think that's the interesting stuff when it comes to stories. Speaking about stories, I actually have to talk about this. This is crazy to me. So lately, people have been just harping on Ellen DeGeneres. Now, admittedly, I don't watch a bunch of her show. I did a couple years ago, that kind of thing, you know, when you see a show. But people are like, oh, she was rude to me and behind the scenes, blah, blah, blah. And it was mind-numbing for me to read the complaints. Now, not all the complaints, because a couple are like, wow, yeah, that person's a jackass. But a lot of them were like, what the fuck are you even, like, we are at the point now where somebody's all, yeah, man, they basically didn't say hi to me. Holy shit. We're in a world right now, guys. We are in a world right at this moment where if years after the fact you did not say hello to somebody, somebody is going to use that against you. I had a question here that popped up where somebody said they don't feel like entering social media right now, but they want to start a podcast. That right there is one of the reasons why people don't want to join. They are just like, what is the world coming to right now? Where somebody's like, oh yeah, man, you didn't say hi. All that's going to do, by the way, is cause a fake sense of niceness, and even worse repercussions behind the scenes. Those kind of things blow me away. And I have had situations where people that I, you know, later on you meet them, maybe they didn't say hi to you or whatever, you meet them and you end up liking them, and they like you, and maybe you never meet them again, where shit just happens in one day. But some of these people are like, I was, you know, asked to be on the show and they didn't say hi to me or what, which I get, by the way, you know, you do invite somebody, you should probably say hi, whatever. But one out of like every, you know, 1,000 people invited, somebody says, oh, I didn't have somebody say hi to me or something like that. And I'm just sitting there going like, damn, there are so many millions of interactions that we have in our lives that we are not judged on. And now we are judged on all of them. And that is one reason why I think humanity as a whole is getting so tired. And it's getting so difficult sometimes to feel real around people, to feel like the way you are is not going to be completely destroyed. And I've seen it with people I've worked with. I definitely have seen it where, you know, behind the scenes, somebody will say something. I'm like, I know where they're coming from. Something's happened and they're trying to slightly adjust, you know, whatever, because they don't want to come across, whether it's, you know, a visitor on a podcast or something like that. And they're like, we don't want to talk about this or that. And I'm like, I get it. You know, I know where they're coming from. I don't necessarily agree. I'm just blown away. I don't even know what to say. Like, yeah, you should be nice, right? You should be nice. But guess what? Should doesn't mean will be. And it never has. It's completely the weirdest complaint in the world. And somebody can say, oh, well, we for sure should be able to bitch if somebody didn't say hi to us. Okay, I guess so. But should that affect somebody's job years later? Now, I'm not talking about the other stuff that does matter. I'm talking about the piling on. Like people will pretend somebody else's plus one is equal to theirs. So somebody will say, they called me a bitch and that I should go and die. Okay, well, that's a plus one to your mean score. Somebody else is like, yeah, they didn't say hi to me and they didn't smile. That's not a plus one, man. Sorry. It's not a plus one. That kind of stuff is so crazy. It's so crazy that people are going after each other. And I'm not even defending her. I'm talking about anybody. This is something that her story just happens to be the one that blew me away when I was reading it, where I was like, a lot of the stories were real. I was like, wow, what the hell, man? This person's a jackass. But then I was reading some of them just being like, why is this person even talking? What are we doing right now? What are we doing as a civilization where we're demanding those kind of interactions from every single person? It's, I don't know, man, it's rough. It feels like it's a dangerous road to hoe because nobody's like that. You'll get a lot of moral people who are like, I'm perfect every day of my life and I'm going to hold everybody up, blah, blah, blah. It's first of all, the moment they're writing that, I'm like, you're an asshole. So now I'm going to use that as my plus one that you said that ever because you're a fucking liar. But number two, it's just not realistic, man. It's not realistic. We're not computers. Shit's going to happen. I don't know about her thing, but I'm seeing it with like all kinds of stars, you know, like just different. And even we've seen it a couple times with like YouTubers, like going to events and somebody's like, well, that person, you know, they didn't say hi to me or they didn't sign my, you know, my shirt or whatever. And you're just like, well, seriously, where were they going? Like, do you know? Because that person probably won't remember the one experience they had with their 1 millionth fan, but you're going to remember the one experience you had with the one person that you wanted a shirt signed from. But guess what? Those are not actually equal experiences. And what I mean is yours is, it does in a way matter more than theirs, but only when it comes to what their memory is going to hold. Their memory is going to hold probably a real interaction far higher than them saying, you know, I got to go. I'm busy. I've got a fucking meeting to go to. I can't sign your shirt. I don't know. Crazy stuff, man. It's crazy stuff. It's weird that it's weird to even know that people are holding that kind of stuff accountable. I know a lot of people who have separated from Facebook, Twitter, everything. They're literally going dark. In fact, I have one friend who's just dark. Like, I don't think they're on any social media. Maybe they're on Facebook, but that might just be a family thing for like getting get-togethers together. But they're just gone. They're like, no, not worth it. I'm completely out. Can't deal with any. And they're not, by the way, they're not a person that any of these kind of complaints would be lodged against. They just can't. It just makes no sense to them. They're just like, you know, people are people. And like, why are we burning these people over the coals for everything versus the things that really should matter? Because things do matter, you know. Like I said, I'm not debasing the real complaints. I'm talking more along the lines of the add-on complaints. Sometimes, doesn't it feel to you guys like sometimes somebody just wants to cause an issue? Like between, like in groups like that, where they just want to sort of get their word into and be like, yeah, this happened to me too. And you're like, not really. It's not really the same thing. Like what you're complaining about, not really of the level that the other people are complaining about. Not even in the same stratosphere, actually, but you still get it. I just hope that all of you guys out there listening on social media and that kind of stuff, spread the word of me more. I want more people to be mad at my podcast. No, I'm just joking. If you do get a chance, spread the word about it. Also follow me at Jeremy Penter. Also check out the shirts, Teespring, ACG. Just type in, like, go to Google, type in Teespring plus ACG, and I should show up. But take care of yourselves. It's a hard last couple weeks. Hopefully we all get through it. You guys should see us pop up here this Friday with a podcast. You'll also see a review coming out next week. On a couple games next week, probably two games. We'll have to see. Got a lot of stuff to cover. Probably going to do more of the post-patch notes. I've really enjoyed doing that with Horizon Zero Dawn. You got to really catch it right after, because otherwise it's like, why is this really a thing? But I think with Horizon, because people were having issues with it technically, it made more sense to do that video. But I'm going to try to keep those going because it did fairly well. People, and I don't mean numbers-wise, I mean people's response to it is in like commenting and saying, oh, you know, it's good to know this, or here's my experience. I think that matters more than views, actually, is sort of the grassroots commenting and recommenting that people get on it. That usually shows that there's, I don't want to say engagement, but there's, well, yeah, engagement. Anyway, yeah, that's it for me. That's it for me. So if you've got this far, I want to say how much I absolutely appreciate it. Maybe check out the Patreon, ACG on Patreon. Would love for you to come in, join the Discord. If you don't, subscribe to Spotify, iTunes, spread it around, tell other people about it. I hope you have an absolutely excellent week. Peace out.